This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic.
Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
Losing anyone is hard, but especially when the death is sudden. When it's a friend, it can be especially difficult. Someone who is so close to you, you spend every day with, but they're not family. So how do you get through that? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, you're going to hear from someone who has lived this and who has some advice. She lost her self-described soulmate of a friend after they were inseparable throughout their 20s. And we talk friendship, grief, and acceptance.
You start making more memories without them, and that's really hard. Like, she's missed a lot from my life now.
Yeah, our long listen of the week coming up later, and would love to hear from you too. If this is something you're going through or you've been down this road, get in touch. Also ahead, the latest on Iran and the US exchanging strikes. We'll have full details of what's gone on in the Middle East. First though,
Hack. This is the day in the life of an unemployed stoner. My job is very easy. Fraud. I commit a lot of it and it makes me a load of money.
On Triple J.
Yeah, there's a lot of seemingly pointless stuff that entertains us online. The kind of content that you don't really seek out, but you're not looking away either. Most of it's a bit of fun. It's not hurting anyone. People running around trying to shock you. But is there a much darker side to some of this content that you don't know about? And what's with all the gambling stuff popping up? Have you noticed that? Well, it turns out some Australian creators are being paid by big illegal offshore crypto casinos, and they could be profiting off your losses. Scobie Mackay is a journalist and creator with the ABC who's been looking into this, and he's here to talk about his investigation. G'day, Scobie. Thank you so much for joining us.
No worries. Thanks, Dave.
You've been looking into what you call degen content creators being sponsored by online casino companies. Can you first explain what is this degen content?
Degen content, it's kind of shorthand for degenerate content. So it's a mix of like rage bait, shock humor, sort of public humiliation content that is basically trying to hijack the algorithm and hijack your attention.
So it's stuff that, you know, you might laugh at, it might make you cringe, but it's a bit of brain rot, all of that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so what did you find when you started looking at these creators in Australia and potential sponsorships?
Well, basically what we found is it's not just content for the sake of content. Like, there's a whole shadow economy that goes on behind the scenes. Basically, a lot of the content creators are getting funded by illegal offshore crypto casinos who pay them for basically presenting the brand in the video for a couple seconds.
So how much money are we talking about?
Well, it really depends on the content creator. So for a content creator that has a few thousand followers, they could be getting a few hundred dollars per post. If you're going up to like the sort of 500,000, 1 million followers, then you're looking at tens of thousands of dollars for a package of posts.
It's interesting. Like, part of the stuff that you explored in this documentary you did, this video you did, was that some of the terms of these arrangements, having creators take commission for losses that are experienced by those who sign up.
Yeah, so this is a really concerning aspect of the monetization. And it's not all of the content creators, but a lot of them have a referral link in their bio. And if you sign up for the illegal casino app via that link, then the content creator that referred them will then get paid a percentage of your losses for the entirety of the time that you play that app.
And just to be clear, this stuff is against the law.
Oh, it's fully against the law, but ACMA, the body that's supposed to regulate this, has not fined anyone for doing this.
So do you think these creators and the ones you've been speaking with know what they're part of, like understand it fully?
I mean, it depends on the creator. I think there's a kind of naivety to it all where, because no one has ever been punished for promoting these illegal offshore crypto casinos, they're probably right in thinking that it's a safe bet, pardon the pun, to promote these casino apps. But when we pressed a few of them that we spoke to about the legality of it all, they weren't really sure where it stood. But yeah, I think for other content creators, the much bigger ones, there's definitely an understanding that what they're doing is illegal. I mean, they're not paying tax on their money. They have to use a VPN to access these illegal sites. They have to get paid in crypto via the app itself.
Let's hear from one of the creators you spoke with, Morgan.
When I started, I was like, I don't want to do gambling. You know, I really don't, just because I view gambling, especially pokies, and that just like a drain on the working class pocket. But then it got to the point where, you know, they were offering X amount of money, and I realised I've been making these videos for free. I'm finally getting a chance where I could be paid for it. You know, I'm gonna take it.
There were also content creators that have publicly come out recently to say that they had been approached by these illegal offshore crypto casinos to promote the casino app, and they had rejected it. One of the people that we spoke to is a guy called Big Vincenz, who's a content creator from Melbourne, and he had had lived experience with gambling addiction in his early 20s. He'd lost around $300,000 to $400,000 to pokies.
Wow.
So he basically took a really principled position where he was like, even though he was being offered sometimes like $15,000 to $50,000 for just stories, not even posts, but just stories, he took this position that he wasn't going to take any money from these gambling companies.
Let's hear a bit from Big Vincenz here.
Quick money, 15 grand, we'll give you it for 10 stories. And I said, mate, I go, no, no. I said, is this gambling? He's like, yeah. I said, no, I don't do it. I've seen other content creators that have actually had the same addiction and then they're there advertising, and I've sort of lost a lot of respect for them, to be honest.
You've also, Scobie, been looking at the connection between one of these creators and one of these online casinos. What have you found there?
We found one of the biggest Australian degen creators, a guy called Krogman, who you might have seen on your feed. He does day 43 of fighting one of my followers till I get knocked the fuck out.
Good impression.
I've seen it so many times. Basically launched a joint venture with this Iranian rapper turned casino operator, in which they created this dubious casino site called betnana.com. We spoke to users all around the world who had basically lost a bunch of money from this site, not through actually playing, but through being denied withdrawal of their deposit or winnings.
So is he still involved with this online casino?
So he copped a lot of heat. He was getting messages basically from all these users or followers of his being like, hey, I signed up to this site based on your recommendation, but now I've lost all this money and I can't withdraw the money that I've won or the money that I've deposited. So what we've basically determined is that he stepped back from this site. He stopped promoting it. He took the link out of his bio.
So have you tried to speak with this creator and get some questions to him?
Absolutely. And he did not reply to us.
Right. Okay. So it's been hard to get some answers. I mean, you hung out with these creators for a while, Scobie. You got to know some of them quite well, I'm sure. What was the overall feeling?
For me, my biggest impression was that they were young people that were desperate for money. And I think that's kind of like wrapped up in the cost of living crisis that we exist in. Like, especially for the young people that are documented in the piece, their whole shtick is that they publicly humiliate themselves in the middle of Sydney. The fact that we're in a sort of economic climate where young people think it's a better option to publicly humiliate themselves in order to earn money from some dubious casino overseas instead of just like getting a normal job is quite telling about like where we are. And it felt like at times a Black Mirror episode. On the other hand, I felt like there was like some sort of genuine artistic intent to what they were trying to create and the content they create. There's a reason why it gets millions and millions of views on the internet, but I think it really gets degraded by the fact that they're just at the end of the day promoting some illegal casino while we're dealing with a gambling crisis.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating documentary. Where can people see it if they want to see it, Scobie?
It's on YouTube on ABC Australia.
Scobie Mackay, a filmmaker, journalist with the ABC, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Hack.
If we need to negotiate with bombs, we'll negotiate with bombs. And we're very good at it.
On Triple J.
All right, let's turn to the Middle East now, because there's been a real escalation over the past day. Iran saying it has responded to US strikes by targeting American assets. There's supposed to be a ceasefire in place, but they're trading strikes, the US and Iran. So what is going on? Ariana Lachente with this update.
We hit them hard yesterday and we're going to hit them again hard today.
Today, the U.S. launched fresh strikes on Iran.
The president tells Fox News that 49 Tomahawk missiles were used to hit targets inside of Iran.
The missiles were targeting parts of southern Iran, near the capital Tehran further north, and southwest, near the Strait of Hormuz. it has prompted Iran to hit back. Here's the Iranian president, Masoud Pezeshkian.
War is certainly not in the country's interest. But if they think that by violating our dignity, our territory and our homeland, we will surrender or back down, then let them only dream about it.
Iran has launched strikes towards US air bases in nearby countries Kuwait and Bahrain. Both countries say they're intercepting those missiles, while Jordan has issued an airspace security alert.
The Middle East is being pulled deeper into crisis and the consequences reach far beyond the region.
A ceasefire between Iran and the US and Israel has been going for the past 2 months, but it has looked shaky for a while now. And this new wave of strikes all kicked off when a US helicopter was shot down by Iran earlier this week.
Based on the helicopter, I guess we have the right to do that. We're really close to a deal, but they keep tapping us along. They keep playing us for suckers.
Today, Trump told reporters he's going to keep attacking Iran until a deal is reached to end the war. And US Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth says he'll target Iran's national infrastructure if he has to.
You can see when someone's trying to tap, tap, tap on a deal, instead they're going to have tap, tap, tap bombs dropping on key facilities in Iran from the United States of America.
A threat Iran's president says is a sign of desperation.
We have witnessed a serious escalation as Israel intensified its operations in Lebanese territory and Hezbollah fired deeper into Israel.
Fighting between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon has been escalating too. Lebanese authorities say Israeli airstrikes killed at least 13 people across southern Lebanon on Wednesday. Here's Israel Katz, the Israeli defense minister.
We continue to attack Hezbollah terrorists everywhere for the sake of the security of the northern communities and the state of Israel.
The United Nations says investigators will head to Lebanon next week to assess potential violations of international law. Antonio Guterres is the United Nations Secretary General.
We have seen the killing of civilians, entire communities uprooted, and extensive demolition of homes and civilian infrastructure in southern Lebanon.
So, what does all of this mean for the Strait of Hormuz, which has become a key part of this conflict because blockades on the strait have seen petrol prices rise across the globe?
I love the inflation. You know why? Do you know we've been taking out millions of barrels of oil? Nobody knows it. You know who doesn't know about it? Iran, until right now.
Iran says the Strait of Hormuz is closed, but the US military rejects this, saying ships were still going through the strait. And Trump reckons there has been a secret mission to ferry oil out at night.
We took out the other night 22 ships late at night with no lights because they don't have any radar because we blasted the crap out of it.
Here in Australia, the Prime Minister is calling for a de-escalation of the conflict. Anthony Albanese says he's confident Australia's fuel supply won't be impacted by the latest wave of fighting.
There's now more fuel in Australia today than there was on February 28 when this conflict arose.
Hack on Triple J.
Ariana Lucente reporting there. All right, we're going to move on to our long listen of the week.
Hack.
There's a sort of TikTok Gen Z vibe of like, speak the truth and call people out. Like, those aren't the kind of friendships that we're talking about here. These friendships are unconditional love.
On Triple J.
How do you rebuild your life after losing one of your biggest supports? Not a romantic partner, not a parent, your best friend. Because while there are things we plan for our whole lives, grief is not one of them, especially when it's a friend we lose. You may not have the same support around you when it's a friend as you do when it's someone within your family. People might not understand just how deep you're feeling it. Well, one person who knows this all too well is Grace Rouvray. She lost her friend Katie suddenly at the height of the COVID pandemic, and the circumstances became a topic of conversation across the country for people who didn't even know Katie. Well, now she's written a book about that experience, what she's calling a love letter to a life-changing friendship. It's called Is It Too Early to Bitch? And we want to hear about it, and with us to talk about it is Grace Rouvray. Grace, welcome to Hack.
Thank you so much for having me.
How would you describe your 13-year friendship with Katie?
Oh, it was the best. I think it's hard to put it into really succinct sentences because it's more that feeling of complete comfortability, of complete ease, of being so excited to see that person's name pop up on your phone, to be so excited to plan an event, even if it's just coffee. Like, she was built into the everyday of my life. And you know, it's one of those things when you look back, you can say, oh, well, every single day was the best day of my life because I had her and I was with her.
And it was a true best friend, really. Like, yeah. In the book you talk about how often you were mistaken as romantic partners, yeah. but you were really soulmates.
Yeah, it took us a few years to sort of figure that out, but it's when other people would look at us from the outside, and yes, a real estate agent did think we were a couple, so we started calling each other wife, which was like delightful. Like, we took so much joy in people thinking that we were a romantic partnership. We were each other's plus one to events. It brought us so much joy.
You met at uni, right?
Yeah, we met at drama school in 2009 at the University of Wollongong. Found our connection through mutual hatred of someone else, of bitching about someone.
Is that why the book is called Is It Too Early to
Yeah,
Bitch?
Yeah, it's one of the first things that Katie said to me. Yeah.
Okay, so very quickly you formed this bond.
I don't really know how it became inseparable, but it just sort of was. Like I said before, she was just built into the everyday and I was built into her everyday.
What kind of a person was Katie? Because reading the book and seeing pictures of her, yeah. as well, like, it honestly feels like you get a real sense of her. Like, she's a larger than life character, yeah. and just a really warm and generous person.
Incredibly warm, generous, very left, passionate about the environment and recycling, kind, spontaneous, a person who could always get a group of people together.
Can you take us to 2021? Like, it was a really intense period for all Australians. It was during the COVID pandemic. Mm. Where was your life at, Grace, and what about Katie's?
Same as a lot of people that, you know, COVID was rough for everyone. Mm. If you were in the creative industries, a lot of people lost their jobs. Katie was stood down from work. We had shows planned because we did stand up together. We had, some shows planned for later on the year, which got cancelled. So it was sort of everything kind of came crumbling down, and like, Katie's mental health definitely took a hit. So when they did start the vaccine rollout, Katie was one of the first to sign up for it when it became available in our age group. There's obviously the two options, and so Katie got the AstraZeneca vaccination, and she was so proud to be doing her bit for us getting out of lockdown so we could go to yoga, so she could get back up out on stage and so she could travel again. Yeah, and so it was 10 days after her vaccination from AstraZeneca that she got a blood clot in her brain and was rushed to hospital where they operated on her. And 4 days later, she did die from the result of TTS, which is thrombosis with thrombocytopenia, as a result of the first COVID vaccine.
So Katie died, one of the very rare cases.
The one in the million rare cases, yeah.
That we were hearing about in the news, that people were asking questions about, and Katie was one of those. Mm. When you heard about Katie's passing, like, it must have been very sudden. Mm. Do you remember exactly what happened and how you found out?
Yeah, I remember everything. So when she got sick, when I got the call that she'd gone in for surgery, it was on the Sunday, the 1st of August, and she died on Wednesday, the 4th of August. So a lot happened in those 4 days, and a lot happened in a space where we're in lockdown. You can't go anywhere or do anything. So I remember exactly where I was and what I did. So the phone call that she was going in for surgery was the Sunday. I didn't find out she was going to die until the Tuesday morning when there was too much damage to her brain, and so she wasn't going to survive. Her parents called me and asked me to tell her other best friend, Prue, and keep her housemates up to date as well. Once we sort of found out that the worst was going to happen, that's when you sort of got to start opening up that phone tree and calling more people.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with writer, producer Grace Rouvray, who's written a book about the loss of her friend Katie, their friendship, getting on with life after such a big trauma. Grace, so it's 2021. Katie has died from this rare blood clot after having the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine. How was it coming to terms with that?
I think I still am, to be honest. I think a lot of it in the first 6 weeks before we announced it on social media, a lot of it was just within our personal circles, and her family had requested no social media at the time because the conversation was so politically hot at the time that they didn't want her to be caught up in the narrative or taken into any political sphere. It was just about Katie, so we all respected that. As it got closer to her birthday, which was 6 weeks after she died, I sort of grew anxious about people writing on her Facebook wall, happy birthday, people in the outer circles of your life who don't know. So I sort of spoke to her family and said, can we put it on social media because this is what's going to happen? And they were like, wow, that's a good point. So when we did post it on social media, that's where it sort of became about the cause of death a bit more for me, because those first 6 weeks were just like, anyone who's been in grief knows that you were just in a fog, like you don't know what's going on. It's been a process for sure, because a lot of people have had opinions. I'd have things like, well, did she have underlying health conditions? Was it confirmed? Did you know that the vaccine saved lives? It's like, I know the vaccine saved lives. I absolutely do, because I am vaccinated myself. I believe in science.
It's really hard because, yeah, you have these conflicting feelings, I would imagine, of not wanting this death of your friend to be hijacked by some in this political discussion that was happening at that time. But also, in trying to fight that, you would also want to make sure that it wasn't dismissed by others.
Yes. People saying, was it confirmed, was probably one of those stings of, like, why would I make this up?
And like, to be clear, like, this is on the death certificate, right?
Yeah, it's vaccine-induced TTS, yeah. And that's what her parents say when people say, did this really happen? And it's also, like, it's confirmed in media releases. And a lot of the time it was people being like, this is fake news, was it confirmed? Like, horrific stuff. And then other people being more the anti-vax side of C and using Katie as this kind of political weapon, which is what we never wanted to happen, and we didn't want her to be caught up in those things. Both sides had an opinion on it.
Did it make it harder to speak about? Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think I was just in a lot of uncomfortable conversations where people would openly talk about it or talk about people who were going on about side effects, and that would happen often. They were like, oh, all these people claiming all these side effects, and those conversations would happen in front of me quite a lot. You just kind of try to disassociate because you don't want to be like, well, did you know? Because then you're going to be labelled a certain person that I wasn't. So I guess there is this kind of defensiveness that goes into anger of going, well, this is what happened and we wish it didn't happen, and this is part of her story and now this is part of our story as well.
Did it change the way you felt about vaccines?
No, it didn't.
Had you had your COVID vaccine when Katie had passed away?
No, I was meant to get it what ended up being the day she died, and I did move that appointment, and I had a GP who just took it really seriously that I wasn't being anti anything. She was just like, nope, too hard, too much. So I did get it. I got it 2 weeks later. You know, side effects have to be read out to you legally, and that was really hard. But no, I believe in science. I believe in medicine. My child is immunized.
Did it make it harder to speak about? Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think I was just in a lot of uncomfortable conversations where people would openly talk about it or talk about people who were going on about side effects, and that would happen often. They were like, oh, all these people claiming all these side effects, and those conversations would happen in front of me quite a lot. You just kind of try to disassociate because you don't want to be like, well, did you know? Because then you're going to be labelled a certain person that I wasn't.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with writer-producer Grace Rouvray about the loss of her friend Katie, coming to terms with that. We're hearing from a lot of people on the text line who have lost people who are close to them, especially friends. Grace, what has it been like learning to live life without Katie?
Ongoing. It is ongoing. You know, the first year is sort of just shock and fog. A lot of people say the second year is harder than the first. And I think in a way that's true, because life has gotten bigger after that sort of first year and you start making more memories without them. And that's really hard. Like, one of the things my husband says is, she's been gone longer than I knew her. And that to me is so wild that she's missed a lot from my life now. Like, I got married and I have a baby, and the everyday moments are the hardest to live without her, because when someone was your everyday and you'd call them and you'd text them, you know, I still have the impulse to see something only she would understand and text her, and you go, ah, where do I put that? Where does that go? And I text one of her friends, Prue, like, we text things like, I'm sharing this thing because Katie would have liked it, and I just need, like, I need to put it somewhere. There are things that happen that you just sit heavier. I don't know if that will ever go away, but then I also hope it doesn't go away, because if it doesn't hurt in some way, then I think that I'll hate that more.
Yeah, in a way you want to feel everything.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us about Grief Club?
Oh, yeah. I think people think that I invented Grief Club, but I didn't invent Grief Club. Grief Club, it's
not
like
something you really want to invent.
No,
is it?
No, it's a terrible club. Call it shit club, great people. Mm. You just don't know until you know. And before you're in the Grief Club, when you hear that a friend's loved one has died or someone in your family, you know, you say, I'm so sorry, and you cook lasagna and you send flowers and you send texts and then you just like go about and live your life. And there's no shade on that. That's what happens. They don't have to take on your grief. They don't have to take on any of that. But then when it happens to you, you're like, oh, dear God, I want to go and apologize to every single person that I've known who's lost someone. It's the same when I became a mother. I wanted to apologize to every single one of my friends who was a parent. I was like, I had no idea what you were going through.
Yeah. There's an interesting part in the book where you write, I increasingly began to hate condolences that lacked specificity. Katie's name appeared less and less, replaced instead with the phrase, your loss.
Mm.
It's funny, isn't it, that people's like really good intentions, obviously, can sometimes just stick with you and maybe not in a good way.
Yeah. One person was like, fly high. And I was like, what? Who's that for? Or the one, may her memory be a blessing. It's like anything that went to like deity, religious, anything like that. I was like, this isn't the same person. Like this person would be in hell by choice. Great person, let into heaven, sure, if that is where your beliefs are. But she would have been like, right, where's the elevator for kick-ons? Turn all the lights off and have a dance party. And I go, let's talk about that. Like we asked for, when we posted it on social media, we said, please share your favourite memories. And some people did the so sorry, sympathy, sympathy, sympathy. And other people were like, she forced me to get out of bed and keep partying at 2 a.m. I was like, yes, you can write, I have this great memory. And a friend that I worked with recently, her dad died. I messaged her and I was like, here are my memories of him. So that's changed how I now.
Yeah.
Because I would have sent the sympathy card.
Yeah.
Of course I would have. I don't know.
Do you have any advice? Well, firstly, for those out there who might be experiencing or coming to terms with grief right now, like maybe they've just lost a loved one, what would you say to those people about the journey ahead?
I wanted to know when it gets better, like how long will I feel like this for? The sharpness does dull, that sharp, like I don't know how to take that next breath, that next step. I don't know how to keep living, like that does dull. But the feeling of the loss has never gone, and that's 5 years. And people have told me that it doesn't. Like the way I describe that feeling is like if you're in a job that you don't like and it's 5 p.m. on a Sunday and you get the dread, the Sunday feeling, like that's the physical feeling for me of grief, and that's all day, every day. And then, you know, depending around anniversaries or whatever, it can get worse. But that all-encompassing sharpness does dull. I would encourage people who are not in the grief club but know that they have friends that do, please put people's death anniversaries in your calendar as recurring events so you can always message them, and it just makes you feel like your pain is remembered. It's the same as a birthday. Like it's another way to mark the year. And then other things, I'd say like go and talk to other sad people. You can make dark jokes with those people because sometimes non-grief club members don't know if they're allowed to laugh at the dark humor, and you're allowed to laugh because it's funny, because you have to.
On the other side, do you have advice for people who still have their friends with them right now? I mean, you lost Katie so suddenly, and I'm sure there's 100 things you'd do with her right now if she was still here. What's your advice to those who have their best friends with them and can't ever imagine losing them?
If you are in the same city or even state, I want people to go to dinner with their friends. Like one of the last lines in the book is, if this book or our friendship is a reason that you create a night to remember or one that you accidentally forget, that is a legacy that I would be so proud of. So I want people to go to dinner and I want them to call their friends. I want them to have a nothing call. A nothing call is the one that isn't about admin. It isn't about debriefing. It is calling to talk for 2 minutes or 2 hours and 2 minutes. Just to be like, hello, how are you today? I would love people to just share friend love.
The book is called Is It Too Early to Bitch? It's out now. Writer Grace Rouvray, thank you so much for speaking with us on Hack.
Thank you for having me.
And if you want to hear the full chat with Grace, please go check out the Hack podcast right now. It's up there. This has really struck a chord with so many of you. On the text line, someone saying, I actually used to work with Katie. She was one of the most absolutely beautiful, genuine, kind people I've ever met. Another person saying, thank you for this episode. I'm grieving a close friend now and I'm in my kitchen crying. I lost my best friend of 35 years. We met in kindergarten almost 3 years ago and sometimes I still can't believe she's gone. Another person saying, yeah, I can agree with Grace that I feel like being part of the grief club has made me more compassionate. Someone else saying, it sounds like Katie would be really proud of you, Grace, which I think we can all agree with. And another person saying, it's a terrible thing to lose a best friend. My best friend was killed on my 25th birthday. The grief is beyond anything I've ever known. Thankfully, my partner is incredibly supportive. And some beautiful ones too. Someone saying, I'm excited to read this book. Yeah, it's called Is It Too Early to Bitch? And it's out now. And someone else saying, the Irish call it Anamkara. It literally means soul friend. I have that friend. Shout out to Pez. All right, that's all we've got time for on Hack.